The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 14. Turkey produces over 70% of the world's hazelnuts. Hello, travel nerds, and welcome to the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, the show that teaches you how to travel more while spending less. I'm Trav, the creator of Extra Pack of Peanuts, and with me today is a man who is known as the tech wizard in travel circles, a former computer hacker, the good kind, and someone who will teach you anything you want to know about how to use your gadgets while traveling, Anil Polat of FoxNomad.com. Anil, thanks for coming on the show and welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Anil, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going to put you on the hot seat right away and ask you a tech question that I get asked all the time, and I'm sure you do too as well. And that is, how can I use my cell phone but not rack up massive bills when traveling internationally?
Well, the easiest way, well, first of all, is to turn off your, put the thing in airplane mode before you go somewhere if you're not prepared. That's the first thing. Usually people ask this question after they go somewhere new and then they come back and their bill is thousands of dollars. You
right.
know what I mean? So that's the first thing. But the best thing to do is to unlock your phone. What that means is basically most providers, and this is specifically for the US mostly, AT&T or Verizon, they lock the phone so you can only use their network. And the reason they do this is because when you buy an iPhone or whatever, you usually get it for $100 or $200.
Right.
The phone is worth a lot more. So they want to make sure that they can keep you tied to them over long term. Anyway, it's pretty easy to unlock a phone. I've written about it, a few guides on how to do it. It takes about 10 minutes.
Okay.
And then you can get a local SIM card, which is... very easy to do. I mean, most of the world, that's pretty much how people do it. They switch from company to company, just, you know, swapping out the SIM card.
Okay.
And then you can, I mean, really, like, it's extremely cheap to do it that way. That's the best way.
And those SIM cards, then you just go to a local provider, whether it be Vodafone or whatever in that country, get the SIM card, and then you can just put it right in your phone, correct?
Yep, exactly. If it's unlocked, it won't be a problem. And I think more and more providers in the U.S. are selling the phones unlocked, usually at higher price or full price for the phone. But it's very easy to do. Actually, the best thing is, rather than going to like a Vodafone or a specific shop, is to go, if you can find like a small store that just sells accessories and phones from multiple carriers, that's usually the best way to find a good deal, because they'll have options from different Vodafone and different companies.
And those cards then are prepaid cards usually, right?
Yeah, prepaid. Most of them now have option for internet. Yeah, I mean, depending on where you are, but it's pretty cheap, surprisingly cheap. I mean, most people think that that's a huge issue. They're doing something illegal.
Right.
But it's not. I mean, for $20 or $30, you can get a lot of internet, if not unlimited, for a month and talk for more than you need.
Yeah, I know. I just did it actually in Spain and in Portugal. And I know, you know, when you cross country borders, you usually have to get a new one. But I think we paid $15 to use our phone in Spain for, you know, 5 days with internet. And we didn't talk much. It was mostly just data for like the GPS, which I learned is a lot cheaper to use the data on your phone for a GPS than actually renting the GPS for a rental car. So,
yeah, I mean, it's you can do so much with the phone now. I mean, it's amazing, and it saves you a lot of money to make it useful when you travel.
Right. I totally agree. Yeah. And I get asked that all the time. And I tell people, listen, just go get a SIM card. But now that you're the expert telling people, maybe they'll listen finally.
It's very easy to unlock your phone. And in fact, okay, I'll make it even easier. In pretty much every country in the world, they will unlock your phone for you if you have no idea what you're doing.
Really?
So you don't even have to worry about that usually. I mean, it changes nothing on the phone except that you can use SIM cards from different providers.
Yeah. Okay. Very neat. And one of the best things you said you wrote about on your site, and one of the best things I love about your site is that you give these great, actionable, useful tech tips, but you're very concise. Like, you explain it, and it makes sense to people like me who might not know everything, but it's not, you know, long and drawn out. And so I really like that. What are some of the most basic tech tips you could give someone who is traveling? Like, questions that you seem to get asked a lot that are pretty simple now to you, but a lot of people who are traveling might not know.
I think the one of the main ones I get are, what gadgets do I need, or what specifically do I need? And I would say, for the most part, a laptop or a tablet is pretty much all you need. You don't need a lot of extra things, I think, is the one tip I would tell people. Is there's really not much difference between technology when you're traveling and when you're at home, except, you know, you need generally to be more mobile, but you don't need... Most people think they buy stuff, they think they're camping, you know, like a solar-powered charger and waterproof bag, laptop bag, and all of these things. You don't really need it because... I mean, you just need a wall outlet.
And right.
So I'd say that's probably the main thing, is don't bring 10 different gadgets. If you don't use them at home, you probably won't use them when you're traveling.
Yeah, perfect advice. I find myself doing that sometimes when I'm packing to travel, like putting in all this stuff and then saying, like, I haven't even it has dust on it because I haven't touched it for like 2 years at home. So talking about traveling, though, on the wall outlets, do you have a specific thing – not a charger, but an adapter that you use? Because one of the readers did ask a question about basically how do you not blow out your phone or laptop with all the different electrical currents. So what do you suggest for something like that?
I always suggest an all-in-one type of charger, because you never know what outlet may be available. And usually when it comes to the European-style plug, something that's sort of... longer, if that makes sense, is sort of like a longer neck.
Okay.
Because most of the outlets I have found in Europe, in parts of Asia, they're in the wall. So then flat it on the wall usually.
Right.
And so it's hard to get the adapters in there. A good one, Swiss, I think, makes a really good one.
Okay.
One is a little expensive, but it's got everything. And most laptops, almost all laptops, have they've got a brick on the cable, so that controls all the voltage and everything. So you don't have to worry about blowing out really the laptop or your tablet. It's pretty hard to do that.
Okay.
And maybe in the third world countries, plug in your laptop, and if you have an iPad or tablet or phone or something, charge that via the laptop. So get more protection.
On your site, you have a list of the stuff that you travel with, which is really helpful, and we'll link that in the show notes. But you have the World Travel Adapter, and then you also have one that's an all-in-one, and then you have like a plug set, which is just different plugs. So I think would there be one that's better than another? Should they carry around the different plugs, or is the all-in-one just fine, and it's going to help you basically wherever you are?
If you're going like on a round-the-world trip, a very long trip, multiple countries kind of thing, I would take both.
Okay.
The reason is because sometimes the all-in-one doesn't quite fit into every outlet.
Right.
Or it's too heavy, actually, I should say. So it's good to have both. And then you usually need more than one, depending on, you know, if you're traveling long term. But for usual vacation or a trip of 2 weeks, 1 month to a few countries, the all-in-one is all you need.
Gotcha. And you've been mentioning using a tablet. I thought that was pretty interesting. And on your site, you're saying you just got the iPad 2 a little while ago for the sole purpose of backing up in case your MacBook Pro malfunctions. And I noticed you said that you could use it for major stuff, even blogging. I 3 years ago got an original iPad with that purpose in mind. Like, I could blog on it if I was traveling and needed to, but I have never, ever been able to really make it work. I've just been frustrated with it. Do you have any special programs that you use with your iPad to, or, you know, do you use a wireless keyboard? What type of tricks do you have to actually make it more of a functioning, you know, almost like a computer light type thing?
Nothing really, actually. It's more of an emergency device. I mean, I used to travel with two laptops, and I know I said at the beginning of the show that don't take what you don't need, but you know, if my hard drive dies, it's happened twice in the last few years, and I have to get online. It's sort of what comes with blogging, I guess, travel blogging. So in a really tight situation, at least I can check email and, you know, write a post if I had to.
Right.
It would be painful, but at least until I get my laptop running again. But I don't find it so difficult to type on the iPad, but I think that's just me.
I know they sell those little keyboards, and I've thought about getting one and stuff like that, and never have. But yeah, I did try to do a post one time, and it was pretty painful. So I thought maybe you had a trick, but yeah, so you're basically just using it as a safety valve just in case of emergencies and stuff.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very neat. And one of the other cool things that you talk a lot about on your site is the photography, and you use your own pictures most of the time on your posts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure everyone assumes that you have a super fancy camera, like $900,000 camera, but that isn't really the case, right?
No, I just have a point-and-shoot. It's a Panasonic Lumix, and it's a great camera. It was recommended to me by a photographer. He said, if you don't want to get a DSLR, which I don't, he said that's probably the best camera you can get. Best lens, a lot of manual options if you want to use them. Does bracketing if you like that option. So, yeah, I just carry that, and all of my pictures come from that camera. And it's great. I mean, it takes wonderful pictures, and it's not very expensive. It's maybe, I think, $250, a lot cheaper than a SLR. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you don't need a fancy camera. I mean, it comes down to composition, I guess. How do you take the picture? What angle? I mean, so yeah, I've seen websites where the blogger only uses an iPhone and they take great pictures. So. Or Android phone, I should say, but yeah.
Yeah, very neat. Speaking of that, like kind of not having to have the top of the end stuff, one of the readers, Tanya, asks, what's the best basic PC laptop for travel with okay speed, relatively low cost, and weight, because she needs to run the Microsoft programs? I know you use a MacBook Pro, and I use a MacBook Air and Pro as well, but do you have any recommendations for PC laptops for people for travel?
The best thing is I keep an updated list on my site with a few options, because it's hard for me to recommend one laptop. It really depends on what you're looking for. There's some great netbooks. There's some good 15-inch laptops. So it really depends.
Okay.
There is a good question. Toshiba out right now. 13-inch or 15-inch I really like. I don't remember the exact model number, but
okay.
I just read about it and took a look maybe 2 weeks ago. So I do keep an updated list. I'd leave it at that. I can look it up, though.
Yeah, well, no, that's all right. The list is on your website at Fox Nomad, and it's where can they find that then if they go to your site?
If they just go under the they just search for best laptops, they'll find a list. And I keep that updated, yeah. It's right. It's just use the search on the homepage and type best laptop should be the first thing.
Awesome. Great. And yeah, that's probably better anyway, because if you're regularly updating that, it's going to constantly change. One of the new things out there, and a reader asked this question as well, Susan asked, what your thoughts were on the new Chromebooks and if they're a viable option, really, to kind of replace a computer.
Good question. You know, I think for most people, I don't think so.
Okay.
I wish it were true, but I don't think so. I would wait maybe a year or two and see what comes next.
Yeah.
I don't think they're quite there yet. And in general, my rule or my advice would be, don't buy the first of anything.
That's great advice.
So don't buy the first model of whatever tablet or the first model of a phone or something. Wait, you know, one or two and see what happens with it. So
yeah.
That's, you know, that's my recommendation. Buy used or refurbished. It's a good way to go. That way you know if it works and
yeah, very
how
good.
Well the company will take care of it.
Yeah, very true. I went and bought the first iPad, not because I'm a huge tech guy, but because I was moving to Japan. I knew they didn't have them there. I wanted to get it before I went there. And, you know, of course, they had no camera in it and stuff like that, which I'm sure they could have put in. But, you know, then they don't have anything to sell for the second model. So, yeah, I think that's great advice, Anil, like that the first of anything is going to be working out the kinks, and they're probably not going to pull out all the stops for it because they know, well, we have to be able to upsell, you know, in a year or two or something like that. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Companies usually use the first model, hardware and software, to sort of feel out a market. And Apple does this very well and very notoriously. They usually, iPhone 4 comes out, 4S is not too long when you consider the life cycle of a product. So,
yeah. All right. Well, yeah, and the Chromebooks, they are new, and I think that for the price, they're not going to be – you can't pay $250 for something and expect to have the same functionality as, you know, something that's a lot bigger and more expensive. But, yeah, it will be interesting to see how they progress and if they really do become kind of a traveler's best friend, because they are – it's kind of what they're geared towards at this point, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One of the most recent posts – that my wife really liked, because she's kind of the designated photographer for our group here, was you put out a post of how to take better pictures with your phone. And a lot of people, you kind of touched on a little bit, don't like to drag their camera around, even if it is just a point and shoot one. We have one of those, but you know, you feel like, oh man, it's too heavy, it's too bulky. I always have my phone on me, right? What are some of those best ways that people can take high quality pictures with their phones? You mentioned a lot of really neat kind of apps and ways that people can do stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is to understand lighting. I think that's key. It doesn't matter what kind of camera you have, what apps you have, or whatever. The key is to understand lighting. So a lot of times people shoot directly into the sun. So they want to take a picture of a building and the sun is, you know, sort of right behind the building. And they take a picture and then they wonder why they can't see the building or something like that. So, you know, you can find a YouTube video of 3 minutes. It will explain what light does and why cameras don't act like our eyes. Like, our brains are very good at differentiating different lights and cameras are terrible at it. One app I really like, if you just want to have sort of instantly nice pictures, I really like Pro HDR.
Okay.
It kind of mimics sort of a bracketing high def, whatever, HDR.
Right.
Photos, and they look quite nice, especially for landscapes or the things with a high contrast. Bright light and you know, a dark field or something like that. That's a really good one to use. So I recommend that one. You know, I know a few bloggers have started using it, and people respond to those pictures because they're very good. And I also like Night Camera for Android and Nightcap for iOS.
Okay.
They help brighten your nighttime photos.
Okay, really neat. And I'll link those apps and then also the post that you wrote too, because it's got more stuff in it about, you know, a bunch of different things you can do. It was really, really well written and, you know, again, kind of very actionable. You also mentioned that two important things that most amateur travel photographers don't do is, you know, editing their pictures afterwards and then getting rid of the crappy ones. And I'm patient zero for that. I have, you know, terabytes worth of pictures that I've never gotten rid of. How much time do you spend editing your pictures? And then what's an easy way to get rid of the bad ones to kind of clear up space on your hard drive?
Well, I spend a lot of time on them. And in fact, it's sort of, it's not my favorite thing to do, to edit photos. So it takes me a while to get around to it. And I only use about 10% of the pictures I take. So I'll take thousands of, it's just I figure if I take enough pictures, some will turn out decent. You know, like I'm not that good. I just take thousands of pictures, literally, and I go through them all, and I just start deleting the ones I don't like. So, there's a really good program. My memory is terrible, by the way. I forget like my birthday and things like that. So,
it's not your birthday today, is it?
No, I just looked at the calendar, even though it's not for 2 months. There's a really good program. I'll have to look up the name. But what it'll do is it'll go through your picture folders and find the ones that are very similar to each other.
Okay.
And let you know if you want to delete them. There's a program like that, which I recommend. But generally, you know, most people, hard drive space is taken up by pictures or videos. And if you travel a lot, and you're keeping all of your photos, then you have a lot of bad photos because, you know, it's so easy to take pictures with, you know, with unlimited pictures. So, yeah, so I can look that up. But, we'll go through your library and delete or let you know that these pictures look exactly like, or do you want to keep them? And it's a good way to cut it down at least by 20-30%, which is
right. Yeah.
Considerable for most people.
Yeah, right off the bat, it cuts them out. Then you manually go through and then delete the other ones. But that's neat. And then what do you use to edit your photos?
I use Adobe Lightroom.
Okay.
It's pretty straightforward. It's not as complex as Photoshop. And it has a neat little auto feature, which helps when you have no idea what to do with the picture. It'll give you suggestions. So I use that one. I use that primarily.
Okay, very neat. And then the first thing that's really good photography advice, because I think a lot of people see travel photographers and they think, man, I'll never be able to do anything as good as that. When in reality, you can probably get, you know, 75% of the way there just by doing these simple things that you talked about, editing your photos a little bit, you know, getting rid of the crap ones and kind of understanding lighting and the rule of thirds and very little things that, you know, I'm not a photographer by any means, but I've started to see that I can take a lot better pictures very easily and on my camera phone or on a simple point and shoot just by understanding that stuff. So I think you're a really good example of that as someone who's not a professional photographer but takes good photos because they understand basically, you know, what is the basics and stuff like that. So some good advice there.
Yeah, I was really inspired by a video I saw in 2007. It was a photographer who was following Obama on the campaign trail, but all of his pictures were amazing, but they're all from an iPhone, I think, I don't know, 3S maybe.
Okay.
Yes, 3G. And they were amazing. I was like, well, if he can do that with a phone, I should be able to do at least something
right
with a camera, you know? And he made so few modifications to the pictures. Really amazing.
Very cool. Well, I know the first thing that introduced me to your site, I think it was back in 2010, was the Best City to Visit tournament, which you do on your site and is, in my mind, the coolest thing that any travel blogger out there does as a contest throughout the year. And I believe you've run it every year for the last 4 years, correct?
Five, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. It's my fifth year.
All right. So, and it so perfectly combines my love of March Madness and travel and competition and wanderlust of reading about all these cool places I want to go. I'm actually a little jealous that I didn't think of it myself, but I'm really glad you run it so that other people can get involved. Can you explain to people, first off, a little bit of how it works if they don't know and how you kind of came up with the idea?
Yeah, basically every February, mid-February, I have a post. It says, I'm going to start the Best City to Visit travel tournament. Nominate your city in the comments below. So every person gets to pick one city. I take the first 64 or 128, something like that. And people nominate cities from, I mean, not like huge cities and cities that are probably more like, you know, villages.
Right.
And so they nominate, I have 64, and then I put them in brackets in a tournament style. And then every week in March, a few times a week, people vote. So that each city is paired with another city. So Paris versus I don't know, London, people vote, and then the winner moves on until there is only one. Originally, I came up with the idea because I am a very big basketball fan. When I was working in the U.S., I watched March Madness religiously every time, every year. So I said, well, maybe I'll do that for my website, and I'll offer a prize. I think it was $50 at the time or something. I didn't really have many readers when it first happened. So I think I had like 16 cities or 32 or something. But anyway, it's sort of grown. It really took off 2 years ago when I think everybody in Bosnia started voting for Sarajevo. It was on TV. I met a television anchor who does a talk show there, and they had a whole 30-minute segment on why Sarajevo was the best city about the tournament. And it was insane. I mean, more than 100,000 people were voting.
Wow.
The numbers were crazy. And this year, the same thing happened with two Romanian cities. So Sibiu and Bucharest ended up in the finals. Sibiu won. And so there's a prize for the person who selected the city originally. It was maybe $300 or something.
Okay.
This year. But it's so much, it's become so much more than that. I mean, people are voting for pride. I mean, it really comes down to national pride. And it's great. And, you know, people get into sort of arguments and why their city is better than the other city. Romania was interesting because some people hated, you know, Sibiu or hated Bucharest, but loved Romania. It was just all over the place. So, yes, it's taken a sort of a life of its own. Yeah, it's out of control.
Well, you actually then, you know, you give a prize for the person who wins, but then you actually go and visit the city that wins that year, correct?
Yes, yeah. So I will go to Sibiu in the next few weeks and visit the winning city. So I started that maybe in the second or third year of the contest. Seemed like a good way to sort of...
Yeah, well, if it's the best place to go, you might as well go, right?
And I've all of the cities that have won, I had never been to before. So it's a good opportunity for me.
And there has never been a two-time winner or anything like that. Some of the cities are pretty, are not the cities people would expect, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote something about the controversies last year. A lot of people accuse me, every year, people who had never commented before started accusing me of things on my site. So the most what I get is that I'm influencing the results or that I really want Istanbul to win every year because it's in the tournament every year. It is my favorite city in the world. I am very biased on that. But I don't, for me, it doesn't matter who wins. So, and people were saying, like, Sibiu, is it really a city? Or this town, is it really a city? So I wrote a little bit about it, and I had no idea before, but the word city has no real definition.
Okay.
Countries can define what a city is in their government, but there's no universal definition of a city.
Interesting.
It's just a permanently settled human, permanent human settlement. So it can be 50 people. You can have a technically have a city.
Wow. Yeah, so I guess you never imagined that you'd have to be quelling fires and controversies about what is a city when you first started it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I, for me, it's fun. Like, I just watch the contest unfold. I honestly don't care who wins or loses.
Right.
Like, for me, it's fun to watch. And, you know, the only time I ever get involved is to break a tie. But there's never been a tie. I think, well, there have been a few in the early stages. But other than that, yeah. So, but yeah, the strange people come out in the contest time. I get, you know, hate email and crazy comments, but it's fun.
Yeah.
It makes it interesting.
Well, if anyone's listening that isn't a part of that, you have to, you know, mid-February, be on your guard, sign up for Anil's email updates, because then you'll know ahead of time and you can nominate your favorite city without someone else taking it. Because I know that's been a big thing, too, with, you know, people wanting to get in with kind of what they think is like the best city or has the best chance of winning or something like that. So if you want to get a jump on nominating a city, make sure to sign up for the emails and you can do that. I know, Anil, I look forward to it every year. So I can't wait for February again.
And you know, the key is that any city can win. I mean, most people, they say, I'll pick New York or something, a very big popular city, because my favorite tiny town will never win. But
right.
It's not true at all. I mean, it just sort of, I mean, you know, it's all about voting early, and so anybody can win. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think you've had now Cebu in Romania. You've had Sarajevo last year. Then the year before was Porto, I think, right, in Portugal?
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then was it Zermatt in Switzerland? Or?
Yeah, Zermatt. And
okay.
Then the year before was, I think the first year was Sydney.
Okay, so I mean, really only kind of one big, well-known city, and that was the first year. And then you went, you know, basically a small Swiss town. Well, Porto is a pretty big city, but not too big. And then, yeah, two kind of, at least to Americans, not well-known places in Sarajevo and Cebu. So really interesting.
And nobody has won twice. And I mentioned that several times at the end of the last tournament. And the Romanians are 100% already ready to see if they can make Sibiu or another Romanian city win again. So it should be very competitive. So
yeah.
If you like competition, it's a nice outlet.
Yeah. So you've now been traveling for 7 years, and I know you state that your goal is to visit every country in the world. What is it really about travel that keeps you wanting more? Like, why do you love it so much, and why do you keep doing it after 7 years with kind of no end in sight?
Honestly, I like seeing what makes us human, I guess is the easiest way to put it. So I mean, I think people are just extremely fascinating. My parents are both journalists. As a child, we would go back and forth from Turkey and the US. And 20, 25 years ago, they were very different places.
Right.
You know, Istanbul was not what it is today, and Ankara certainly was not. So, you know, seeing that difference was really interesting to me as a child. Like, why, you know, I saw, you know, very poor people around Turkey, and why don't you see that in the US or something like that? So that was always very fascinating. Like, why, I always just assumed that the whole world was the same as a child, you know?
Right, of course.
But, you know, going to Europe, it's very different and blah, blah, blah. But, and then as I got older, I realized that people have very strong opinions about other people in the world.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it.
But almost always, they have opinions about places and people that they really haven't had much contact with, or yeah, they have never been.
Or they've met like one person from that country or something.
Exactly. And so I came to realize that, you know, traveling is the way that you realize that, oh, we're not so different, you know.
Yeah.
You know, there's a Greek Turkish rivalry, but in the grand scheme of things, the cultures are quite similar. You know?
Yeah.
I know my father wouldn't agree, but you know, they're fairly similar when you're looking in the world. I mean, so it really helps to see different places. I'm really fascinated why we think we're so different when we're quite alike.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And I think that you, at least for me, not only when I travel do I get to understand other people more and their cultures, but it obviously then helps me understand myself, because it causes you to, you know, look inside yourself and be like, well, if they're this way and I'm not the same, why am I not the same? You know, mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting thing with travel, is that you not only learn about where you are, which is very neat, but it also helps you learn about yourself.
Absolutely. I absolutely think so. So the, you know, I used to be, when I was a teenager, much more of a temper than I do now. I'm generally laid back, but I had very, you know, kind of firm beliefs that this is right and this is wrong or something like that, you know. But I've come to realize, you know, that people do everything, like even eating. Some people, some countries, they eat with their hands, which personally I don't like to do, you know, because in Turkish culture, we don't generally touch our food. We eat with, you know.
Right.
And that's very strict, or putting your feet up, things like that, where in other countries, that people put their feet up all the time or on the table or something, which...
Yeah, takes you back, kind of.
Yeah. But you just realize, well, they just do it a different way, and there must be some explanation underneath everything why it's that way there.
Right. Yeah, I think that's very, very well said. And I know for you, I think all your travels now are, you know, you support yourself through your website and the sales of your tech guide for travelers, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So,
but I also know that, you know, you're a pretty frugal traveler. What are some of the best tips that you use, ways that you save money so that you can continue to travel and but still spend, you know, less money? Because if you spend a ton in one place, then maybe you can't keep going to another place or something like that.
Yeah, the key is for me is to stay longer in one place. So to set up sort of a base and get an apartment somewhere in the world and use it to travel to nearby places.
Okay.
I think it's very expensive to stay in hostels and hotels. It's expensive if you do it long enough. It's generally better to get an apartment somewhere. You can see that country and then maybe, you know, if there are countries nearby or you can get a budget flight somewhere in the region, something like that. So this generally, the slower you travel, the cheaper it is, the less expensive it is.
Yeah.
And I try to have a plan. So, you know, I am trying to go to every country, but, you know, I try to focus on a region at a time.
Okay.
So that I can, yeah, save. I mean, doesn't always work out. And I,
of course,
you know, I'm bouncing all over the place, which is kind of how it is these days. But yeah, generally be slow and have a plan. Like have an idea of where you're going to go.
Right. How far in advance do you plan things out? Like, for example, this year, do you know where you'll be, you know, in 6 months or anything like that? How far do you normally plan things out?
having said that, I'm generally very last minute. So I know the places, I have a rough idea of the places I want to go, usually a few months in advance. And at the beginning of every year, I try to say, well, I want to go here, 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 and try to figure it out. Now, if an opportunity comes up or a cheap flight, you know, really cheap flight somewhere and I can't resist, I'll do that. But yeah, so this year I know I haven't been to Sibiu yet, the winner of the tournament, so I have to go there. That's on my plan. I'd like to go to Pakistan this year. That will be a sort of a new place. Where else do I want to go? Yeah, I think I'm going to go Ukraine and Poland, so okay. Eastern Europe before it gets too cold. But that's pretty much it. I know, and I'll be in Las Vegas next month.
Oh, all right. That's, yeah. So you're in Eastern Europe, and then you're bouncing over to Las Vegas for any reason?
For a very nerdy reason. I'm going to the Star Trek convention there.
There you go. Hey, if it's what you like, at least it's in Vegas.
Yeah, it's not bad. I sort of ran into one of the actors last year, and okay. he was talking, and I was explaining my lifestyle, and he said, "You didn't come here all the way for this, did you?" And I said, "Yes, I kind of did." He was like, he was laughing. I mean, he thought it was a little absurd, but I don't know, it's fun.
Hey. Well, when you're a full-time traveler, the absurdity of traveling across the globe for something like that is, well, it's not as absurd, obviously, as if, you know, you're someone who takes one or two vacations a year and, you know, that would be your vacation or something like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, are there, I know you said Istanbul is, you know, your kind of favorite place. You're biased, you know, this is the best city to be to. Are there any places that you've been to that you haven't had as good of an experience as you thought you might? Because everyone likes to talk about their best places, but have you had any places where you're like, I might not want to go back there?
Usually the places I have the lowest expectations for turn out to be my favorite places.
Okay.
And then the opposite happens. So I have really high hopes for a place and I don't like it as much. I'm sort of left out.
Yeah.
Buenos Aires is one of those cities for me.
Okay.
I was really expecting to sort of be blown away. And it's okay. Like it, I don't know. It felt sort of like disconnected, you know?
Okay.
Like it's easy to walk around, and I didn't feel like a feel for the city. I don't know how to describe
it. There wasn't the vibe you were expecting, I guess.
Yeah, I thought it would be much more, the people would be friendlier. I thought it would feel smaller somehow.
Interesting.
And it is a really fascinating city. to walk around because there's so many different neighborhoods which are very different, but it kind of let me down, to be honest.
Yeah, I only asked because I feel the same way about Penang in Malaysia. I had really high expectations, and I still enjoyed it. I wouldn't tell someone not to go there, but it wasn't what I expected. And I just think that sometimes when people talk about travel, this is the best place ever. No, this is the best place. And sometimes, you know, there's a reality of like, okay, it's not exactly the best for every single person. So it's neat to hear other people's opinions about places that they've been that didn't hit them the way they thought it would. So,
yeah, I mean, I think everybody should go everywhere they want.
So right, right.
I try not to write bad about any place.
Yeah.
There's some places I don't like very much, but you know, you have to go and find out for yourself. I mean,
exactly.
I know a lot of people love the cities I don't like. So, everybody is different. So,
yeah, that's a good way to put it. It is going to be different for everyone. Go where you want to go. As long as you're traveling, you most likely will not be disappointed too much because you're still seeing something new, no matter where it is that you're going.
Yeah, I mean, it's most people, you know, when they, let's say they go to work every day and they want to travel, they know they don't like doing that.
Right.
So at least it's a new experience to go to another country and know, well, I wouldn't want to do my go to work here every day either. So.
Right. Well, other than the Best City to Visit tournament, which we've talked a lot about, that's coming in February. And again, I would implore everyone to sign up for your email so they know about it and can prepare for it, because it really is a bunch of fun. And it kind of brings up these cities that you might not have heard of or thought about, and people get pretty passionate about it, which is neat. Is there anything else that you have coming up in the future that people should be looking out for, either on your website or anything like that?
I just recently reduced the price of my Ultimate Tech Guide for Travelers ebook. So it's now $9.99 on the Amazon bookstore. And so other than that, I'll be writing several columns for Wired magazine.
Oh, interesting. Neat.
Read Wired. You will see me there at some point in the near future. And yeah, that's all I have really planned. I've just sort of been catching up on writing, and I will start traveling again in about a week.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. And check out, if you do have tech questions, I mean, I think the book is 164 pages. I mean, it's chock full of information. Basically, any question you have is going to be covered in that book. So for the $9.99 price, you're getting incredible value out of that. So they can check that out on your website or on Amazon.com, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Anil, thanks so much for coming on the show. I know figuring out technology while traveling can be extremely daunting, you know, especially for people who don't travel a lot and even people who do, like myself. So I'm really, really thankful that you could take some time out and help myself and the listeners by giving some really great usable advice. And before I let you go, remind people, you know, where they can find you online and how they can come connect with you.
Yeah, the easiest way is to go to foxnomad.com, all one word. And you can find me on Facebook and Twitter from there. It's the easiest way. And sign up for the email updates, so you'll be the first to know about the tournament as well.
Yeah. So, no, once again, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing some of your incredible tips. I'm counting down the days to the tournament.
I look forward to seeing what you pick this year.
Great. Thank you, Anil.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you love all the amazing technology and gadget tips Anil gave us today to help you while traveling, make sure to check out his site, foxnomad.com. It's full of great stuff, including the Best City to Visit tournament, which will begin in February. Also, if you're someone who finds themselves constantly having tech questions, grab a copy of Anil's The Ultimate Tech Guide for Travelers. At only $9.99, it's far and away one of the best deals out there. And lastly, if you're serious about learning more about frequent flyer miles and how to use them to fly around the world for free, we are accepting applications for our second session of Frequent Flyer Bootcamp, which will take you from a beginner to an expert in just 1 month. Spots are very limited to the first 30 people, though, so if you're interested, visit extrapackofpeanuts.com/frequentflyerbootcamp right away. That's all for today, guys. Thanks again for tuning in. Really appreciate it, and happy free travels. Yeah.